behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. Strap on your seatbelts, podcasters. This episode is likely to go anywhere. Why? Well, for those of you who know the name Marcin Hajar, you know that he's never afraid to speak his mind and he doesn't take life too seriously. It's a great mix for having great conversations about something we both love, craft beer. If you don't know Marcin, you need to take a long, hard look at yourself. The Middle Eastern-born New Australian is at the heart and soul of the Victorian brewery Hawkers. He's an entrepreneur, a visionary, a bit of a hustler, and now he's an Aussie. We can also call him a shit stirrer. I hope you're comfortable, because this might take a while. Marcin has a lot to talk about, raising funds for fire victims with Christian O'Connell, collaborating with Three Weavers on a new beer, and a big crowdfunding plan. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Marcin Hajar.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
Oi, oi, oi!
Yeah, you got it. Well, we didn't have to practice that. That's brilliant.
99.94.
Yeah, well done. Well done. Mate, there's so many things I want to chat with you about tonight. I said in the opener that if people don't know who you are, they should. But how about we help them out? And let's do it like this. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to basically give everyone a recap of your adult life. It's not going to be easy. But let's see how we go.
I'm Lebanese. I was born in a little village called Chaim. Well, I'm registered as born in Chaim because my dad was born there. I'm actually born in Beirut. I've lived most of my life in Lebanon. I've spent 7 years in the UK, a year in New York, a year in Dubai, a year in Cairo. 2 years in Dubai. And now I've been living here for almost 6 years. My background is I studied politics and law. I was doing a double major at university, and then I went into war photography. So after having survived the Lebanese Civil War, I went out and covered Sarajevo, the siege of Sarajevo, the Bosnia War. After that, my mom found out that I was in Sarajevo because I hadn't told her, and lost her shit and made me come back to Beirut. As someone who studied politics, I found it quite confusing as to what career to get. And so my uncle, who was an investment banker, recommended I go into investment banking for a training session. Now, obviously, as a politician, as a political scientist, I had no idea about numbers, didn't really care about sciences, but somehow I ended up being an investment banker for 9 years, at which point I decided to raise money to do my first airline, which was called MENAJET. It was supposed to be the first low-fare airline in the Middle East. And I did that when I was 29. And then I raised money for a second airline, which was the national carrier of Ras Al Khaimah, a little emirate north of Dubai. And then I woke up one day in the desert. And I thought, I really don't want to do this shit. I hate what I'm doing. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine from Denmark, and I had told him that I want to brew beer, despite having never been to a brewery in my life. And he had called me back 2 weeks later and said that's the best idea he's ever heard. So I quit my job, and we set up the Middle East's first craft brewery in 2006, in the middle of the Israeli Hezbollah war when the Israelis were bombing Beirut. I went into my kitchen and brewed my first batch of beer, which was a complete mess. I boiled everything together because I didn't know microbiology and I didn't understand what yeast was, and ended up with a stinky mess 2 weeks later. I still tried to drink it though. It was terrible. And then I called DME and ordered my first system, which was a 12 hack little system, at which point I thought it might be a good idea if I actually went to a brewery and maybe even try and learn a bit more. So I studied to be a brewmaster in Canada, came back. And meanwhile, while we were doing all this crazy stuff, we opened our doors and CNN got hold of the news of this level who started brewing in the middle of the war and decided to shoot an interview with me, which aired 56 times on CNN. So all of a sudden you had mass interest from the news. So I was all over being covered, and that's how we started. 9 years later, I was exporting beer to Australia. I had been coming here since 2009, And I loved the place. And I was exporting beer here when my distributor at the time and co-founder said, what if we had another war? And I thought, yeah, well, there's going to be a lot of dead people. He said, yeah, but how do I get beer? I thought, great, this is what this guy's thinking about. And I thought, why don't I brew beer here? I like the place. I love the place. And that's how Hawkers was born. We were literally hawking beer in Sydney when he cracked a joke that I had gone back to my roots as a Lebanese, because the original Lebanese immigrants to Australia in the 1880s were hawkers and street vendors.
Yep.
And that was where the name was born. I thought this was a perfect marriage of my new home and my heritage. And basically the story was phenomenal. I just couldn't avoid the name.
That's brilliant, mate. That's 4 minutes for those that are counting, but that was pretty bloody good to get all that out inside 4 minutes. And then from you start the brewery then, and then you sort of fast forward a few years, and all of a sudden at last year's AIBAs, you won the Best IPA Award, which was the last time that you and I spoke. And if my memory serves me correctly, you were pretty fucking happy that night.
Yeah, I was pretty fucking happy, not dressed appropriately, because I never take these things too seriously. I mean, we also won Supreme Champion Brewer at the International Beer Challenge in London, 2016, and Brewer of the Year Oceania 2 out of the last 3 years.
You've been going all right.
It's been a wild ride. Look, we have a fantastic team, and the guys, we've built up a team of brewers who, you know, I used to think I knew something about brewing. These guys just take it to the next level, to be honest.
And now, of course, you're an Aussie and you're about to have a big friggin' year at Hawkers. So let's get on to some of the good stuff. First up, do you think you might have a hype beer on your hands with the late to the party Hazy IPA?
Look, Hazies for me forever were a style that I wasn't interested in. I didn't really see the technical point. Hawkers is about a passion for beer, right? And it's a obsession with perfecting what we do. And when on my last trip, I ended up we went to see Sean Hill at Hill Farmstead. And then on the drive down, we went through Boston, went up to Treehouse and hung around with Nate and Lauren, his wife. And I saw in Nate a reflection of Sean Hill. I mean, for people who don't know Sean Hill, Hill Farmstead is probably, I think it's been rated the best brewery in the world 8 out of the last 10 years, according to Rate Beer.
Yeah.
The guy is on the spectrum. He is one of the most fascinating people to talk to.
Oh, wow.
Talk technical beer. The guy is obsessed to the nth degree. He went to the Czech Republic, tasted 100 Pilsners, picked his top 20, went and talked to the brewers, came back home, did test batches, imported faucets, learned the proper pouring techniques, all three of them just for a limited release beer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's dedication for you?
And that's a Pilsner, which, you know, is not sexy in the craft beer world.
No.
Which is really funny because I think it's the sexiest style, to be honest.
It's a great beer. Love it.
And to go down to Treehouse and talk to Nate and see what was going on and really get an understanding of what he was doing with hops. You know, I find on a lot of beer threads sometimes, beer geeks get obsessed. Oh, I can taste the Mosaic in this beer, or I can taste the Simcoe in this beer, or whatever hop it is. And it's always fascinated me that that's a crock of rubbish. And the reason I say this was I was at Bale Breaker during the harvest season for hops. And I was discussing hops with them. And we were laughing about the idea that somehow Amarillo hops in the US are the same as Amarillo hops in Germany. Or Cascade hops grown in New Zealand or Australia can be the same as the ones grown in Washington State, never mind Oregon, never mind all the other hop growing fields. You know, if you think of terroir, one side of the river is different to the other side in what you get grapes. So somehow that you can get a universal hop character is insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the guys there, Bale Breaker, they actually are, I think, fifth or sixth generation hop growers. And they have two of the biggest hop farms in Washington State. And they said people come out and taste different plots, smell different plots, and decide which plot they want to pick their hops from. And depending on the 10-day window, in the 10-day window of hop harvest, you can get completely different characteristics out of each hop. So they gave
me, I've heard that, yeah.
They gave me an example of Simcoe. And in the first 3 days, they were picking up grapefruit. In the second 3 days, it was pine. In the last 3 days, it was dank. And Lagunitas from the same plot would pick as New Belgium would pick, would Balebreaker. And Balebreaker would take the middle 3 days. New Belgium would take the first. And then Lagunitas would actually pay extra to try and keep it on the vine for two extra days to kind of give it a bit more marijuana aroma and dank aroma to accentuate that. And I'm thinking this is Simcoe in one plot on one farm, and somehow someone says, oh, I can taste Simcoe in a beer. It's just absurd.
Ridiculous, yeah.
So when you talk to these guys on the spectrum of and what they're doing with beer, you know, they're brewing beers with the same hop from the same plot picked at different parts and then reblending them. I gained an appreciation for hazies. And our first beer out of the door is a hazy IPA. It's not an IPA. It's a hazy IPA. It's not supposed to be sweet and orange juicy, although it is big on juice, right? But it still
does have that bit of dankness about it, doesn't it?
100%. So it still has a bit of bitterness. And we were very clear on defining it. And yes, on Untappd, it says an IPA NIPA because they simply don't have a hazy IPA style on its own.
Yeah.
but it's not just the hops. It's the water chemistry that we're talking about. It's a lot of other things that are changing. You know, essentially you're brewing with a brewing water that's more geared towards stouts than it is towards pale ales. Flavors. And so there's a lot of technique behind what was going on. And when we came back, me, Hamish, and Mick, we were very excited to give it a go. And so we've got a new program of new beers called Fresh Coast, and this is the first edition of it.
Nice. Well, if that's what they're all going to be like, I'm all in because that was a ripper.
Thank you. We were quite happy with that one. And this is more of an experimental series for us. And whatever we like, we'll end up maybe making it on a bigger production.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Speaking of new releases, another one you've been working on lately was the one that you've called Heroes Gold, and you made it with Melbourne's Gold 104 morning DJ Christian O'Connell. And it was something you did to raise funds for the Victorian Bushfire Appeal. How did that come about?
We got a call one day from the guys at Gold 104, and they said, look, we have this idea. We want to try and somehow do something practical to help the bushfire. And we thought about, why not brew a beer? Why not every time when you have a knockoff and raise your glass, think of all these heroes out there? And we're not just talking about the firefighters. We're talking about everyday people who are fighting extreme conditions, going through all this hardship. And how about every time you raise a glass, you somehow were able to contribute a portion of that money into helping these people. And I thought, this is a great way. I love Australia with a passion. This is a place that has been very welcoming to me, has given me opportunities, and I feel I owe this land a lot. I chose to be an Australian citizen. When I was living in the UK, I could have become a UK citizen. I had immigration green cards to the US. I chose not to pick them up. I wanted to be an Australian because I really feel like this is a place I belong. And it was my way to kind of give back to the society from a very grateful Lebanese who was given opportunity and welcomed here.
That's nice. And what sort of beer did you end up making for that? Because, I mean, that's going to have a pretty broad appeal. So did you go pretty softly, softly?
We went pretty softly, softly. I mean, you know, people talk crap about lagers all the time. And I think they are the hardest styles to really make because once you nail a lager, your brewing technique, you can nail anything you want, to be honest.
Yeah.
So nailing a good lager is much more difficult than nailing a milkshake strawberry IPA.
You can, there's so many things you can hide behind with those other sort of style beers, but with lagers, it's pure and crisp. There's not a lot to play with, is there, really?
100%. And any brewing techniques that you mess up will end up showing in whatever you do. So we ended up with the lager because we very much did want mass appeal, but also we drink lagers. We like drinking lagers. I mean, I love hoppy beers and I love imperial stouts, but I fucking love a pilsner and love a lager.
I'm with you. Absolutely. I've been drinking quite a few of them lately. I just, I don't know. Sometimes I just want something that's like, you know, simple, fresh and straight up and down, and a lager just hits the spot, I reckon.
100%. And they are also not liked by brewers because of the difficulty of getting them right.
Yeah. And also they take longer in tank and stuff too, they don't they? So
100%.
Yeah, so they're probably a bit more complex. But look, while we're speaking about new beer releases, I've been wanting to talk to you about this for quite a long time. I want to speak about a previous one of yours. It's probably what I would call a regular fridge filler in my house. And that beer is actually Rover Henty Street Ale. It's probably not what you're expecting me to say, but I bloody love this beer. And what I wanted to know about Rover was, why did you actually create that sub-brand and not keep continuing on with the Hawker's brand for that one and the green can as well?
Well, I mean, Rover is a perfect example of how we at Hawker's mess up all our marketing, right?
I love that.
Because the original idea of Rover was to create a value brand where people can buy multiples of the same beer.
Yes.
Not feel that their bank is being raided.
Yep.
We were happy to take a lower margin on the product because we felt that there is a price elasticity to the price of beer, that if we got the right packaging and the right pricing, that would fly. And so we created Rover, and the name Rover came from the rover of the earth, someone who travels around, not the dog Rover. And it was, you know, a tie-in to Hawker's. The original idea, we came out with Stubbies, 330 ml Stubbies.
I remember those. They were a different color too, weren't they? They were
blue. Yeah, they were blue and red.
Yep.
And we came out in a 12-pack configuration, and the idea was to try and convince the bottle shops to treat them like not a 6-pack, but treat them like a case. Take the same margin, be able to sell a 12-pack at $20, $25, $20, $25, and off it goes. Unfortunately, we didn't study our market properly. So it confused bottle shops. It was priced like a 6-pack, so the higher margin was applied. They didn't really fit in the fridge. The bottle that we used looked like it was less than 330 ml because it was the hand grenade bottle, but it was the same size as a regular bottle. In the end, we scrapped that and said, okay, we'll revisit it at some point in the future. And then one day, one of our brewers made a slight mistake. He brewed 32,000 liters of 4.3 version of our pale rather than going full on. And we're like, okay, what are we going to do with this beer? Ah, look, let's re-release a lot. Because we tasted the beer and it was spectacular. We loved it.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're not going to throw good beer away. Let's redo the Rover in cans and see what happens. And price it aggressively. And actually what happened was we sent Rover out into the world and the bottle shops had decided that they were going to apply craft beer margins on it. Not, you know, when you get a CUB slab or Furphy slab, they're taking $2, $3, $4 a slab in profit, which is nothing. Whereas when they get a slab of craft beer, they're taking a higher margin because the craft beer drinker is willing to pay more. And I think that is outrageous. So we went into the market and a bottle shop in Adelaide had just had a massive fallout with Lion Nathan and decided that to kick out Furphy. So he decided to apply the same margin that he was making on Furphy on Rover, priced it at $50 just to piss off Lion Nathan. Social media took off whenever anyone tried to price it higher than that. And the price for the case was set at $50 to $55.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, people started buying it as a fridge filler because they knew the beer was independent. They knew the beer was good. They know Hawkers. We don't compromise. It's full of hops. It's actually got a shit ton of hops in it.
That's the scientific method for measuring.
Yep. Yeah, that's shit ton. Well, you know, this is a podcast. I can't go with the F word, can I? So that is a scientific measure to how many hops we have in there. So it's very well hopped. It's 4 grams per liter of dry hops on a 4.3% beer, which is quite a lot of aromatic hops in there. And people were like pleasantly surprised. It completely came in, you know, with its very simplistic branding, which, by the way, won a gold medal.
Did it really?
Yeah.
It's just so simple, isn't it?
It's
gold and it's
black. Yeah. And, and the whole philosophy of Hawkers was we're going to avoid all this Dungeons and Dragons on the label and just go simple from day one.
Yeah.
We'll talk about branding if you want a bit later.
Oh, yeah, that's my next question. Come on, just stick to this first question, will you?
So people were very pleasantly surprised, and it took a life of its own. And we actually penalized our sales reps for selling Rover because we wanted to just push Hawkers, because at that time we hadn't perfected the recipe yet and we were still tweaking it. And so it was not as profitable as Hawkers for us. And so we basically did zero support, under-promised, but over-delivered on the liquid. And Rover, for me, is the perfect example of how if you put a solid enough liquid and price it well, people react positively. No one picks up a Rover just because it's cheap now. People actually go out and buy it.
Now, and I know every time there's a bottle shop just down the road from me. Every time I walk in there, it's front and center in their cool room. Priced it around that 55, and I'm like, yep, I'll take that because it's so easy to drink. It's a little bit, because, you know, I drink a lot of mid-strength beer. It's just a little bit over the mid-strength, but, you know, not too far. And it just tastes good. It's just so simple for me. It's just like a no-brainer. I love it.
Yeah, and you can sit there and you can talk about all the Amarillo and Cascade hops in it, and you can talk about all these things, but it really doesn't matter. Beer doesn't always have to be a snobby drink. We don't have to be wine wankers.
It does, and that's the thing. I never really even get further into it other than the fact that I really love the taste of this beer, and that's all I care about with it for me.
Well,
I'll love the taste of it.
Secret facts that no one knows. Rover beer will probably do 1 million liters for us.
Oh, wow.
And Rover is one of the very, very, very few, if not the only, craft beer at Dan Murphy's that sells more by the case in units than it does in six pack. And basically no singles.
Wow. That's good.
It's remarkable.
For a fuck up, I'm going to call it a success.
Well, it's a success, and we introduced the lager because we think also if you price a lager right,
yep,
you can appeal to a broader audience. You know, your Carlton draft drinker can't really justify a $75 slab of lager. There isn't enough differential flavor wise for someone who's not trained to justify that additional expense all the time. But if you were $5-$10 more expensive, then why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the lager's been going okay for you then?
Oh, yeah. Great. Oh wow. Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear, mate. So could there perhaps be I don't know, because you got Henty Street and Gilbert Road. Are they the two sort of roads that go around the brewery? Is there another street which might become, I don't know?
Yeah, on the other side. So on one side of Henty Street, you've got Gilbert. On the other side, you've got Newlands Road. So we're keeping that one a bit later on. We'll see if something comes up. But, you know, we're not adamant about expanding the range. We don't think of range. We just think of, okay, how can we brew something that we love? And is this going to be cool? How can we get it into the hands of as many people as we can, right? And so far, if you look at the overwhelming styles in Australia, now XPA, Pacific Ale, whatever the hell, Summer Ale, Golden Ale, all this baloney is all pale ale. And so if you, the biggest styles that sell today in Australia are a pale ale and a lager. And we've got a pale ale and we've got a lager, and they're perfectly suited for the environment. They're low ABV. You can smash a shit ton of them on the barbie. And it's just phenomenal. So, you know, I think we're happy where we are right now. We'll look at maybe potentially expanding with a third beer, possibly, if something comes up and we're really convinced about it.
But how's it going to work, though, with your amazing marketing? You've got your green, you got your gold, you got your Aussie.
Right.
You throw a third one in, you're just going to put it all to shit.
Right, exactly. Exactly right. Celebrate the green and gold. And it's the one thing that I've learned since coming here. 99.94, Don Bradman's batting average. That's the only thing that matters.
Exactly. Maybe you make the third one in a white can. Maybe that's the thing. Then it's not going to interfere with green and gold.
Oh, Jesus. If you make a white can, then you're going to hear all sorts of comments about race and non-race. No, no, no.
Ignore me. You obviously know more about branding. Let's talk about the Hawker's brand, because, of course, you've recently refreshed that.
Yeah.
You've done away with the man with the beer cut, and you spun what I think is a very bold logo and what looks a lot like the seven-pointed star from the Aussie flag.
Is the seven-pointed star from the Aussie flag. Good Lord.
Look at me go, hey? When I first saw the new cans, I wasn't 100% sure if it was the Aussie flag star or if maybe the new cans were a nod to your favorite superhero's costume, Brie Larson in Captain Marvel. Have you noticed that they're pretty similar to that as well?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't at all, but I need to go
mix of the two. So that was a purposeful thing that you would put the Aussie star on there, the seven-pointer?
So when we started off, our branding was black and a color underneath.
Yep.
And the idea was when we did limited releases, we were going to have a white and the same colors in the bottom. The problem is when we started, we could barely make enough Pilsner, Pale, and IPA for the first 3 years. We didn't really have many other releases. So in come Bulter and they take the white. I'm not saying this was intentional, but, you know, we didn't invent dual colors, but Bulter another color. And then you had Wolf of the Willows and Black Hops, and a lot of other breweries were suddenly simplifying, going for this black and another color.
Yep.
So more and more, we were looking a lot like all the other beers on the shelf. And the problem was our guy, who everyone seems to think he's a little beer guy, actually, he is a fruit juice hawker in Bangkok, which we had an artist sketch out and vectorize. And that's how we got the logo. I mean, he was selling bottles, right? But originally, he was a juice salesman.
The first time I ever saw him, I actually thought he was mowing the lawn because my eyes aren't great. And I thought he was pushing a lawnmower around, and it was a lawnmower beer. That's where I thought it started.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of people thought that. And the problem with that guy was he was such a fine print.
Yeah.
And then under him was a Helvetica Nuve bold font.
Yep.
So the label always felt empty because from a distance you couldn't make out what the guy was. He's too fine. We couldn't thicken him. And we had the problem of dealing with the color. So we went and started with our XPA. We did a yellow and red. And then we carried on in our first iteration of the cans using color. So all of a sudden, we looked like bipolar. We had a split personality. We had two brands, effectively, one in bottles and one in cans, and it wasn't really cohesive. And at that point, I had applied for my citizenship, and I realized, having lived here for long enough, that people know what a bloody hawker is. I don't need to draw it on the bottle. So we got rid of the guy, and we wanted to use an icon. And the first thing that came to mind was a brewer's star. Now, the brewer's star originally came from the production of alcohol historically. Stars were put on barrels of alcohol to designate alcohol for people who couldn't read.
Yeah.
And the brewer's star comes in many iterations, 5 and 6 points and 7 points and whatever points. And so we thought of the brewer's star and we thought, oh, I'm applying for my citizenship. Let's make it a 7-point star as a nod to the Federation, as a nod to me becoming an Australian.
That's awesome. I love it.
And then we wanted to add a bit of depth to the brand. So we came up with the pinstripes for the core range and the non-core range. Then we could go funky and do whatever we wanted with. And so if you look at our core range, it still carries itself. And the non-core range still carries the logo, but we can be more creative with the artwork there.
Oh, right. Okay. Now I'm with you. Yeah. So I just was just bringing up a picture of the late to the party. Yeah, you've still got the star and the white hawkers, and then you've just got some funky stuff around the edge, but it still looks like it belongs.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. I'm glad I asked that question. Now, was there something in, you know, doing this rebrand, you know, maybe doing it because of the Victorian scene being so goddamn hot right now? Was it maybe a bit of, you know, hey, guys, you know, you guys are going well, but don't forget that hawkers are still a big player in this scene.
No.
Did you need to remind people?
No, because we looked at rebranding and we studied a lot of cases. It's not a rebrand. It's a brand refresh, right?
Refresh, sorry, yes.
Yeah, we didn't really change our name or change the brand or do anything. So the other point that we were struggling with was independence. How do we identify ourselves as independent? Now, I think the independence seal from the IBA is great. But unlike the Brewers Association in the US, they only opened it up to the IBA members. Now, I am fundamentally against the IBA because I don't think their policies are focused enough on the important issues that are affecting independent brewers, which are tap points and access to the market.
Yep.
And the reform in the excise program. I'm not advocating that we drop excise. I'm advocating an equal treatment between all alcohol producers. So we should get the same tax and the same rebates that wine gets. There is no reason why you claim that you're going to tax higher alcohol and then you subsidize wine producers to produce grog. You incentivize them to produce grog because of wet tax. So because the IBA wasn't focused on these, I was a board member and a director of the IBA, and I decided to move away from it because I did not believe they had enough focus on this. This is not dissing anyone. It's just a difference of opinion.
No, yeah, that's fine. Absolutely.
And the point when they came up with the independent seal, I was super excited. I was like, great, we're going to put this. And you know what? Charge me for it. And they said, no, you have to be a member. So I have to belong to a group to put an independent seal to tell people I'm independent. That kind of defeats the purpose. So if you notice under our branding, it says Melbourne Brewed Independent Beer.
It does. Yep.
Because also we wanted to give it a bit of a Melbourne identity. Not because of somehow being exclusive of everyone, but recognizing where our roots are. We're a reservoirian brewery. We are based in a reservoir, which when we came in was regarded as a hellhole and is now becoming one of the coolest suburbs in Melbourne. So yep. We're very proud of that. So part of the rebrand, what drove it was the need to tell people that we were independent because people look at us as the big boys, which is kind of idiotic. We make 3 million liters of beer a year. 3 million liters of beer a year. Furphy is 30 million liters on its own.
I spill it on the floor.
Goat is 5 million liters in its first year. So somehow that we are big is ridiculous. The other thing that came from the rebrand is we thought hard about the whole process. And I read an article, if you touch your brand, no matter what small change you make, you are going to get clobbered and trolled.
Yes.
So Celine just took the accent off the E, the fashion brand, yep. And they got yep. clobbered. Slack changed the way the hashtag was drawn because the original hashtag was 8 colors and they couldn't print it.
Yeah.
And they got accused of drawing a swastika and penises on their logo. 2 weeks later, Zara squashed their font together and they got slammed. So for us, rebrand, we took it quite seriously. We first of all, it cost us a lot of money, not just in the designer fees, but in the material that we had. We already had a 4-year brand out in the market. It also coincided with us moving only to cans. So all of these things were coming together. And we said, okay, we're going into 100% cans. We're only going to keep the barrel aged and the Belgian stuff in bottles. We're going to take it to 500 mil. Let's do something different. And that's where the rebrand came from.
Fair enough.
And as we expected, we copped a ton of crap because we came out with the first can, which was the pale ale. And then as the rest of the brand rolled out, people realized, okay, hang on. it's not the end of the world. The beer is still the same, and hopefully people don't eat the can, drink the beer.
I like that.
But I understand the passion behind it. The great thing that showed us was people were very passionate about our brand.
Yeah.
For someone to come out and be so anti the refresh, you don't touch the thing that I love.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw this as well when we decided to pull West Coast away from being a part of our core range into being occasion. Now, we still brew West Coast regularly. But what we now do by brewing it occasionally is we make sure that it sells out on the shelf before the next iteration comes out. We haven't touched the recipe at all.
It's fresh as hell.
Because what we found was because it was part of our core range, we had bottle shops order it that weren't necessarily selling it. And so we were finding 9-month-old cans sitting on the shelf. And when you're passionate about your beer,
that's no good.
Not just looking at dollar figures, you don't want someone to pick up your favorite beer and think, tastes okay.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. It's and especially with that sort of style of beer too. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we copped a lot of crap over that, saying, oh, we're just going after the dollars. We actually are making less money off West Coast by selling it this way. But we're doing it because now every time you get West Coast, it's like, wow, this thing is super fresh.
And it's award-winning too, isn't it?
Yeah. 100%.
So this brings me to another West Coast IPA producer. These guys are on the West Coast of the USA, and I believe you might have been collaborating with them lately. And I'm, of course, talking about Three Weavers Brewing out of California. How did that come about?
Yeah.
What have you brewed, and what did they think of your West Coast IPA?
Well, we flew out to LA on the way. Okay, so the last trip to CBC, I finally got my visa. So the trip before my visa got held up because I went into administrative processing and then I got approved again. I don't know what the hell was happening. I think Trump had a lot of issues with people coming into the country. But they finally realized I was a brewer and I wasn't likely to blow anything up. So they finally let me back into the country. And I was flying in with Mick and Hamish, and we were flying into CBC through LA, and we thought, all right, we'll go and drop some beer at Three Weavers because we were pouring our collaboration with Balebreaker, which was Tom Needs More Friends, a beautiful IPA, one of the best we ever made, at CBC, which is a great honor. It was pouring at the Key Keg stand and at the Yakima Chief stand, one of the few Aussie beers to ever be poured at CBC. And we stopped over at Three Weavers and we just got along. We got hammered over there and the guys took us around and then we've been in contact and we wanted to do something together. So the brewers come out and we've brewed the Rye West Coast IPA, which is loosely based around Naughty, their biggest beer, their biggest seller, their double IPA.
Nice.
Going to be a 6% West Coast rye IPA.
Sounds good.
It's our first foray into rye IPAs, and I can tell you this one is a banger.
I love it how you say that.
Holy cow. I mean, if you had this beer, it's phenomenal.
When does that one get released, mate?
It's getting released next week. Again, this one, so Three Weavers, Hawkers, Australia, US, what's in common? Jackie Weaver.
Yeah, I was not going there. Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver. And so we sent it off to get the label designed, and someone dug up a picture of Jackie Weaver holding a Rice Krispies case doing an ad in the 60s. And if you look at the font on the damn thing, it's brilliant. That's where the font on the label came from.
How great is it to be able to have a bit of fun with your beer names?
100%.
Hey, so did they rate your West Coast IPA?
Oh, yeah. That's why they came back to brew with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good then.
100%.
Nice. Are there any other collaborations, you know, kicking around out there that you want to do this year?
Well, last year we did a collab with Against the Grain, which was our Against the Reservoir. a hazy IPA. Our first foray into a bit of a hazy IPA thing. And then we brewed a Bow and Luke, which is their imperial stout aged in bourbon barrels, except in our version, we brewed it and put it into lark rum barrels.
The Tasmanian connection. Nice.
Well, it wasn't really a Tasmanian. I don't even think I'm allowed to say lark to rum barrels. Okay. I think they're just...
not lark.
Not lark. They're rum barrels. I think they're rum barrels. And we then had a bit of fun. And so there's three variants. So there's the base beer and two variants coming out. So that's about to be released. We've got another couple of collabs down the road planned. Some of them may or may not be local.
Ooh, look at you just teasing it out there. Just creating a little bit of buzz, mate.
The aim isn't really, I'm shit at marketing, so I'm just holding out until we finalize some of this stuff, just because I don't want to end up with more egg on my face. I reckon
you go, you know enough to be dangerous. You go all right. All right, let's get to the next big thing, which is happening right now. And I'm, of course, talking about the crowdfunding campaign you're currently in the middle of. Let's talk about the plans for the money that you're going to raise. What are you going to do with it?
Buy a house in the Bahamas.
Nice, and run off.
No. That wasn't supposed to go live on air. So we've been a production facility forever. And what that has meant is our interaction with our customers has always been through social media.
Yep. You even say on your website that we don't have a tasting room or something, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Because when we first came into Reservoir, the council had no idea what we were doing. They didn't want a nightclub. And so they said, you can have six people.
Oh.
And so it took us a long time to gain their trust and eventually fight. And now we have a license for 170 people. So we have a great license now. Somewhere we just don't have a venue. Yeah. And the idea came about when we looked at how much money we made through the cellar door. What was the total volume of beer sold? Because our locals constantly come in and berate us for not being able to have a knockoff drink at our place. And literally, if you've ever been to our brewery, our cellar door is literally two fridge doors, two fridges side by side in the office. So you walk into the office to buy beer, right? It's not really the greatest experience
not
on earth.
Really, no.
But our locals were still buying a shit ton of beer from us. So you hear the chatter and you're like, does this really translate? So we looked at the numbers last year and it just blew our brain that we were selling a crap load of beer from two fridges in the office. And we've never been really able to experiment a lot with beer in the sense that we haven't been crazy releases. We don't release a beer every week. But the brewers every now and then would like to have a little play. So we thought, okay, why don't we combine these two, create a cultural hub for us, somewhere where we can interact with people, somewhere where people can walk up and tell me what a douchebag I am, and where they can hopefully abuse Mick a bit more than they abuse me or abuse Hamish, because our head brewer loves his lagers. And combine that with a little community and have a space where we can celebrate the beer and have a few events and have fun. I mean, we've done some crazy events in the brewery. We've done a cinema brewery, and we've done a circus in the brewery.
How?
Last year or the year before, we basically invited a circus troupe into the brewery to perform at the brewery. So we are sponsors of Cirque Oz.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We are the beer partner of Cirque Oz. So we had a full circus in the brewery with Halcyon Drive, a great Melbourne band that plays amazing music. It was amazing. And so we've always wanted to do this. The problem is we've never really had the focus to do this. The other side of it is we are about to launch our employee share plan. So all employees are going to own part of the business.
Good one.
It's not nice. It's the right thing to do.
It is not. Nice. Many wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's true. And I find it ridiculous because it's not the stainless steel that makes the brewery, right? It's very much the people who sweat and work hard and have this crazy passion and still come back every day. So we thought it was great to share with them. But it's also the other side of this equation are the fanatical, brilliant fans that we have, in the sense that we have a community around us that is so supportive of what we do. And we felt, well, this is a great way to extend it so that people can feel true ownership of the brand.
And so that's going to culminate in a mezzanine floor, am I right?
So we're knocking down our old office. We're going to extend the mezzanine, reinforce it, build a beautiful ramp structure so that we can also have disabled access and be disabled yep. conscious. And then the bar will be on the mezzanine floor at eye level with the brew house, right up next to the brew house. So you're literally going to be within a stone's throw from the brewer as he's working.
I couldn't think of any better place to drink a beer. You're drinking and looking at the direct system that's just made that nice fresh beer for you. How good's that?
Yeah. And you're in a full-size production brewery, so it's not a little brew pub, right? So you are literally in the heart of the action.
That's cool. Not wanting to get ahead of ourselves, but what happens if you're oversubscribed to the offer? What does that mean for you?
A house in the Bahamas?
No, I'm second one.
Second one, yeah. No, the second one's Jamaica. No, they don't have extradition treaties, I believe. I haven't researched them enough, but I'll tell. No, we don't plan to be oversubscribed. We don't want to be oversubscribed. We're going to take whatever we get. We're not going to get greedy. This isn't an opportunity for us to just go bananas. We're going to also buy some tanks, some smaller tanks, because right now, up until recently, our smallest tank was 8,000 liters.
Oh, so that'll work in nicely with your guys wanting to, you know, experiment a little bit too.
100%. So we had 5 8,000-liter tanks, 13 16,000-liter tanks, and one mammoth 40,000-liter tank sitting outside. We finally bought a little one, a 4,000-liter tank. And so that's where you're getting all these limited releases. And I know 4,000 is a lot for a lot of brewers. It's their big tanks. But for us, when we got it, the guys were like, great, we can play now.
Nice.
And that tank's been booked out for the next 2 years with all the crazy stuff that the guys want
to
do.
Can I take you back to that, you know, the talk before about the local council not really understanding what you were doing and all that sort of thing? You know, when you started Hawkers, it was a pretty large brew house. You filled extra capacity by allowing other brewers to get started via a contract brew situation. The council had been more lenient and more interested in working with you guys, would you have gone with a standard brew pub model or maybe a smaller brew house with a tap room as opposed to the larger production size brewery if they'd been different?
Not really.
No?
Not really. I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
Because for me, brewing and hospitality are two different businesses altogether. Yep. I find it extremely rare when brewers can really run hospitality venues well, and when hospitality venues can run breweries really well. The crossover isn't natural. One is very scientific, nerdy, reclusive. You know, you get into the yeast strain, and the other one is very social, bubbly, drinking, partying. And so I'm not a very hospitable person in the sense that I can be very divisive as a person. You know, there's a lot of people who want to pull up their pitchfork and chase me down into a dark alley. Yet there's a lot of people who seem to think, you know, I do okay. But I'm not the right person to run a hospitality venue. I would love to be in a hospitality venue, but it's not my natural place to run a hospitality venue. And so with this expansion, we've hired the right people to run our hospitality venue. So we've expanded the team again. So when we started with 4 people working for us, and now we have 50.
Mate, every day is a school day when you know your shortcomings, and yet you're able to find people to go around you that compliment you and increase the overall, you know, skill set of the business. To me, mate, that is just pure leadership 101 that you're doing there.
Well, I mean, look, you can't be an expert in everything. You have to admit to yourself that you're good at certain things, and it's better to have someone who is better at what they do than you.
Yep. That's
running that side of the business.
100%. Sounds like it's bloody working for you, mate. You've just got so much stuff going on right now. Have we missed anything? We've been going an hour. Have we missed anything?
Well, you know, the other thing that we're quite famous for is our barrel-aged beers.
Do you know what? I don't know a lot about your barrel-aged beers. Why is that?
Well, our 2017 bourbon barrel-aged Imperial Stout, which we think is our worst one out of the range, made it to the final 10 table at the World Beer Cup. And barrel-aged beers in the World Beer Cup are one of the most highly contested categories.
Yeah.
We love our barrel-aged beers at Hawkers. And, you know, we've done aquavit barrels, cognac barrels, rum barrels, whiskey barrels, bourbon barrels.
Not lock barrels.
This year we have quite a few coming out, and they're going to be surprising. Our first one to come out would be to commemorate our five-year anniversary, and it's a fucking banger.
Fucking banger. I love it how you say that, mate. That's awesome. That's great. Well, maybe you need to talk about those more on social media.
We kind of keep them in the background until the time is right for them. You know, there seems to be this trend in Australia where stouts are only drunk in winter. It seems to be the sky goes dark.
Bullshit.
It's absolute bullshit. It's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard. Someone will have a red wine happily with dinner in the summer, but can't get themselves to drink a bourbon barrel-aged beer. I was like, are you serious?
It's like when I have a coffee after dinner or whatever. That's how I feel dark beer should be.
100%. I mean, a stout is one of the most refreshing beers. Just a regular session stout. You know, Guinness is 4% ABV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never understood that, because I'll drink a dark beer all year round. I love them. They're just magnificent beers.
100%. And so this year we've got a few in the pipeline that are quite amazing. And we've got one that when we brewed with New Holland this almost a year ago now, well, just under a year ago. So we brewed a hoppy ASB with them back in New Holland, in Grand Rapids in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So we tasted, you know what? I'm not going to give it away. It's coming out. It's a very controversial style, but I think we also did a lot of research on getting it right. I mean, the thing we do at Hawkers is we don't care how late we are to the party, right? We're not trendsetters.
Yep.
We've never been. We're not the cool kids on the block. But what we are is people who are obsessed and finicky about what we make. We really care about what we make. It's not about the money. It's not about chasing trends. It's not about banging out whatever the fuck the market wants. It's about, oh my God, this is so impressive. How the hell did you do it? How can we do it? How does it become ours? Let's work on this. Let's do this. And so we found another banger of a beer that we fell in love with, did a few more tastings, and realized how wrong it was in this country. And so we're going to come out with one of these pretty soon, and then it'll be good.
Mate, you're selling yourself short. I think you're a bit of a fucking rock star in this beer industry, and you've done exactly what any great rock star would do at the end of an interview. You leave the crowd wanting more. So thanks for your time tonight, Marzen. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Cheers to great beers.
Cheers to you, and cheers to your listeners as well.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?